Okay. I heard that. Okay. Fine. So tonight we're going to be starting our next malacha, which is the malacha of Tzad. Tzad is the last malacha here in Perek Ha'Orig. After Tzad, we will have completed Perek Ha'Orig. We're probably going to move on to Perek Ve'iluk Sharim and work on the malachos of Kosher and Matir. But I guess let's do one malacha at a time. Tzad's going to take us a few weeks anyway, so we'll figure things out. Let's just start from the beginning. Tzad is the malacha of trapping. If you trap a baal chai, some type of creature on Shabbos, so that fits under the jurisdiction of malachas tzad. Where did tzad take place? In the Mishkan. So Tosis and Daf Sadidal and Manal points out that tzad, he points out two instances where tzedah took place in the Mishkan. One was in terms of the tchashim. Tchashim were a very unique species that only existed at that point in history. They had very beautiful skins, and they, Bnei Yisrael, used the hides of the tchashim for the construction of the Mishkan, so they needed to trap the tchashim in order to procure the hides. So that act of trapping the tchashim was one instance of tzedah in the Mishkan. And the second instance of tzad that Tosis points out was in terms of the chilazon. The chilazon, we know, was the special creature that produced the blue tchelas, the blue tchelas dye, and that was also necessary for the construction of the Mishkan. So once again, trapping the chilazon was also an instance of tzedah in the Mishkan, as you can already start to intuit. So this is where we're going to see in Emirat Hashem probably in about 2 weeks or so. We're going to get into the big tchelas debate, and it comes up in Malachas tzedah because of this very fact that Seda is applicable to the chilazon, and that may give us certain insights into what are the qualifications to be the chilazon and whether what they found nowadays meets those specifications. So that's going to be a Mirtz Hashem probably in about 2 weeks. Fine. But either way, so that was just a brief introduction to Malachas Seda. So tonight we're going to start off the Malacha with two basic parts. In part one of tonight's shiur, we're going to work on developing an understanding of the Maisa Malacha, of Malachas Tzedah, the exact type of activity that needs to be performed to violate Tzad. And part two of tonight's shiur, we're going to be working on developing the Yisod of Malachas Tzedah, what we call the productive quality, what's the underlying accomplishment in the Malacha, and that's going to have far-reaching consequences. Fine, so that's the agenda for tonight. So let's start with part one. So in part one, we're going to work on developing the Maisa Malacha, an understanding of the exact type of activity needed to violate Tzad. And we're going to begin with a Rambam. I put on the Mar Makomos a Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos is coming to give us an example of a tolda of Tzad. It happens to be quite ironic that Tzad has a lot of Gemara relative to the different Malachos. A lot of the Malachos are dealt very briefly in the Masechta. Tochen has like three lines. Last week, Topher had like three lines. Tzad has like more than a blot. And despite the fact that there's so much Gemara, there's not one example given explicitly of a tolda of tzad in the Gemara. So the Rambam comes along to give us, to spell out explicitly, what would be a tolda of tzad? You know, if you trap an animal, so that's just trapping an animal. What would be a tolda of this malacha? So the Rambam says like this. He says that a tolda of tzad is as follows. Apparently, it's the practice of some people, or it used to be the practice, to use specially trained hunting dogs to hunt some prey, or whether for sport or not for sport, whatever it would be. There are special dogs that are trained, that are hunting hounds, that could be trained to go out and to capture prey. So the Rambam says like this. Let's say a person sends out these hunting dogs to capture a deer, and the person also plays a role. The person goes and runs and chases the deer down, and he startles the deer. He runs in front of the deer and startles it such that the deer kind of stops, it gets stunned, and the hunting dogs are not able to capture the deer. Says the Rambam, that is a tolda of tzad. You send out these special hounds, and you run along and you startle the deer, and then, you know, like the sort of the deer in the headlights, you kind of run in the headlights and you stop the deer on the road, and then the dog captures the deer. So that is the tolda of malaches tzad. That's the Rambam's presentation. Already Ben has a kasha. Yeah, Ben. Ben is asking, why is this not a problem with Shvisas Behemto? So it could be it is a problem of Shvisas Behemto. There's a problem that your property has to rest on Shabbat. It can't do malachos. So we have Shvisas Behemto with Mechamer. It could be they are, but we want to know if the guy's going to get skila. You don't get skila for a Shvisas Behemto. No, I'm saying Shvisas Behemto wouldn't be skila. So we want to know if the guy is going to get, it could be, it would be Shvisas Behemto. I'm not saying it is or is not. I mean, that's a separate discussion, but we want to know about Malachas Tzedah. Well, it could be both. Yeah, I'm saying. Ben is asking again, why is it not Shvisas Behemto? There's an Issur D'oraisa to have your property do Malacha on Shabbos. So it could be, it would be, when you send out these dogs, if you own them. But where we want to know, aside from the Issur D'oraisa Shvisas Behemto, would you violate Malacha Tzad, one of the Lama Tes Malachos, and get Skila? Okay, so let's commence a little bit. Fine. Comes along the Magen Avraham, and the Magen Avraham makes a very simple diak in this Rambam. He just raises the question that why the Rambam have to add that detail that the person himself is running along and startling the deer to allow for the dog to capture the deer. Why was it not sufficient just to send out the hunting dogs? You sent out the hunting dogs to capture the deer. Why is that not sufficient? Why do we have to add the detail that the person ran in front of the deer and startled the deer? That's the kasha of the Magen Avraham. So the Magen Avraham says that we must conclude from this Rambam that was apparently essential, that was critical, because the basic yisod is going to be that seida always needs an activity. There always has to be a maisa, some activity, in order to violate melaches tzad. If you just send out the hunting dogs and that's it, you're not playing any direct role, you're not doing any activity, and that can't be a violation of melaches tzad. It might be other yisurim, as Ben pointed out, shvisas behemto, mechamer. We could discuss other types of yisurim. But in terms of one of the lamtes melachos, the melach of tzedah, there would be no activity. There can't be a violation of tzad. So the Rambam had to add the detail that the person ran along and startled the behemah, to startle the deer, so that the person is playing a role, that he's doing some activity in order to violate melaches tzad. So that's the basic yisod of the Magen Avraham. Now I'm seeing hands shoot up, so I'm going to finish it off a little bit. We'll see if this helps clarify things a little bit. That's the diak of the Magen Avraham. Now comes along the Shaar Tzion and the Mishnah Berurah, and he just emphasizes that although we see, based on this whole analysis of the Magen Avraham, that seida needs an activity, you need to do some activity to violate melaches tzad, but at the same time, we also see that it doesn't have to be such a profound activity. It could be a little bit more of a diluted, indirect act. In this situation, when a person runs along and startles the deer, he's not playing a primary role in capturing the deer. He's playing a more peripheral role. He's just running along, startling it to allow for the hunting dogs to capture the deer. So we see the Shaar Tzion emphasizes that although, yes, we see you need some activity, but at the very same time, we see that a more peripheral role is sufficient as long as you participate. As long as you participate in the hunting, in the trapping, you do some activity, that's sufficient to violate melaches tzad. So this is the basic starting yisod we see from the Rambam. We see this a refinement, a clarification, what type of activity you need to violate melaches tzad. We see on the one hand, they need some activity. You can't just send out the hunting dogs. At the same time, even any participation, even a more peripheral role, is sufficient to violate melaches tzad. So let's just stop now just to answer some questions before we continue. Penny. Pinny is asking, do we assume that sending out dogs is considered koho, like the person himself is shooting an arrow? And we would not assume that sending out dogs is considered koho. So when the person sends out the dogs, it's not like he's sending out a force. You know, if you shoot an arrow, yeah, it's like you did it. You send out a dog, so we don't consider it like you did it. That's certainly considered indirect. Any other questions? Okay, fine. Now, this basic yesod in the Rambam has ramifications for the halacha in terms of setting up traps on Shabbos. The question becomes, so what's the halacha in terms of setting up traps on Shabbos? I remember one time many years ago, so one of the Avreichim Nicole told me that he was sitting at his Shabbos Suda with his wife many, many years ago when he noticed a mouse crawling behind his wife. Now, he pointed out that there's no right thing to do in this situation, because if he informs her of this mouse, it's going to be much worse than if he doesn't inform her of this mouse. So you can imagine the great koach that it would take for a person to hold that in, to save a whole a whole scene there. But it took place on Shabbos. So the question becomes, if a person realizes that there's an unwanted guest in the house, can you set up a trap on Shabbos? What's the halacha in that situation? So it was Daniel Parnas, by the way. So I don't think it's nothing negative about it. It's just fine. So The Yona pointed out that it happened multiple times to his wife. Okay. very nice. Okay, so now if you want to be more informed, good Friday night material, the Shabbos table. What's the halacha of setting up traps on Shabbos? So I put in the Mar Makomos a Rashba on Daf Yud Zayin on a base. The Rashba says like this. He says that based on this Yisod from the Ramban, so he doesn't quote the Ramban by name, but he sets down the same basic Yisod that we need an activity. So he says on a Deraisa level, it's going to be perfectly permissible. There's no issue with setting up traps on Shabbos in terms of Melachas Tzeita, because you're not doing an activity. If you just set up a trap and then a few minutes later, a mouse runs into the trap, so you didn't play an active role, any role in terms of the actual trapping of the mouse. It's more peripheral, it's more external, you know, initial role, just like you send out the dogs, you set up the trap, but you're not actually participating in the actual trapping of the mouse itself, let's say. And so on a deraisa level, it's perfectly permissible. So that's what the Rashba says on Yizayin and Beis. It's perfectly mutter mideraisa to set up a trap on Shabbos. However, so the Rashba is medayik from the Mishnah on Yizayin and Beis that there is going to be an issue on a derabanan level, because he just makes a very simple diak in the Mishnah there. The Mishnah on Yitzayin and Beis brings Beis Hillel that states the following halacha. Beis Hillel says that it's mutter to set up a trap on Erev Shabbos, that it is permissible to set up a trap on Erev Shabbos, despite the fact that if you set it up on Erev Shabbos, then on Shabbos, your property will be doing malacha. As Ben was pointing out before, there's an issue when your property does malacha. So maybe I shouldn't be able to set up a trap before Shabbos, because on Shabbos, my property is doing a malacha, it's trapping the animal. Beis Hillel says that that is permissible, no problem. So that's the Mishnah on Yizayin and Beis. Comes along the Rashba and he makes the following diak. He says, well, wait a second. Why is the Mishnah merely permitting it on Erev Shabbos? What about Shabbos itself? I just got through saying that it's perfectly fine midereisa. Seder needs an activity. So why didn't Beis Hillel even permit setting up a trap on Shabbos itself? So the Rashba says, we must conclude from here that there's an Issa derabanan, that all midereisa, it is mutter to set up a trap on Shabbos, but midereabanan chazal were concerned. You could understand that we permit setting up a trap, so it's a slippery slope that could lead to a person misconstruing the halacha and trapping an actual behemoth. And so therefore, Chazal midrabanan prohibited setting up traps on Shabbos. So that's the diak of the Rashba on Yitzayin and Beis, that although midraisa is permissible, but midrabanan, it is still prohibited. Fine. Ben, you have a question still?
Yeah, Rashba, according to the Sabbath, seems to be
okay, so Ben is pointing out that if Kedarko, Ben read the Rashba inside, and the Rashba quotes a Tosefta, which has a few more details about the halacha of setting up traps on Shabbos. So Ben's plugging that into the case of the mouse. That's a fair question. I don't have the answer to that on the spot, though. Good question. Fine. Now, just one last detail to round out part one of tonight's shiur. I just want to share an interesting shayla that comes up in the postgame. So we paskin, as the Rashba and the Mefarshim on Yizayin and Beis point out, that it is asur midrabanan to set up a trap on Shabbos. So we would tell Daniel Parnas that he don't tell your wife, but also there's nothing you can do about it. So just be calm for Shabbos, and afterwards we'll figure something out. Midrabanan is asur to do. The question the poskim want to know is like this. Let's say a person set up a trap before Shabbos, which is permissible, but let's say you forgot to put the bait in the trap. So can you put the bait in the trap on Shabbos? That's the question that the poskim want to know. So I saw a little bit of a machlokas in the poskim, the Chashuki Chemed, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. So he wants to argue that this may be permissible. He says, listen, setting up the trap itself is only an issue midrabanan, midrais is perfectly permissible. So once we go to the bait, that's already two steps removed. It's not the trap itself, it's just putting up the bait. So that already can be permissible. So that's the argument of Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. And I saw Nissen Carlos was quoted as saying that this is still going to be prohibited. This is included in the Issur Derabanan. That not only can't you set up the trap itself, but even putting bait into a trap would be included in the Issur Derabanan. Fine. So with that, we've concluded part one. Let me just summarize, then I'll take the question. So with that, we've concluded part one of tonight's shiur. So we started out Malacha Sad. We're trying to develop an understanding of the Maisa Malacha of Seder, the exact activity you need to do to violate Sad. We deduced from the Rambam a very specific type of activity necessary to violate Seder. On the one hand, the Rambam had told us that you need some activity. You need to run along and startle the deer, some participation. But at the same time, a more peripheral role was sufficient. That was the Yisod from the Rambam. And we applied that. We saw an application that you sowed in setting up traps on Shabbos is perfectly fine midiraisa because there's no activity when it comes to setting up a trap. But the Rashba did point out it's aser midirabanan. And we ended off by pointing out that there's an interesting shaila in the poskim about putting bait into a trap. So that is a machlokas of poskim. Okay, Daniel.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I missed the beginning part of this year. What's the paradigm from the chilazon? What was just that case?
Okay, so the chilazon, Mirtz Hashem, as I say, this is going to be our opening to get into the chela sugya in 2 weeks. But for now, just chilazon was just one example of seda in the Mishkan. That in the Mishkan, Tosas pointed out two examples in the Mishkan where there was seda. One of them was trapping the chilazon. Apparently, they need to trap the chilazon to get the dyes.
So how did they do that? Are you saying that case wasn't where they set a trap? And that it would catch it by a net, or you're talking about they netted it?
Okay, so Daniel is asking, how did they do that? Did they set up traps? So what did they do? So that's a very good point. So based on this sugya tonight, the answer would be they. I just want to clarify this, that for me to answer that question, it's a little bit loaded because there's a big time debate whether the chilazon is a sea creature, was it on the land, what is it exactly?
Well, my nafkamina, what does that matter?
Well, I'm saying, how were they trapping it? Were they? I mean, in other words, my gut is to tell you based on going through the sugya that they took nets in the water and they trapped it in the water, but we're going to need more details. So meaning as of right now, off the cuff, we're going to have to go through the discussion of what the chilazon was exactly. But for now, meaning you're right. This is why we're going to get into the chilazon sugya, because if we're seeing tzad applies to the chilazon, it might give us some insights into what the chilazon was. So as right now, we can assume that it was a sea creature and they took nets in the water and they captured it in the water. And you're absolutely correct. It's not that they put out a trap and the chilazon went into the trap. They must have actively trapped it in the water. So that would be a simple.
Yeah, it just seems odd that historically the very normative way of if we're talking about seda would be to set a trap, right? That's just a very normative way.
So Daniel is pointing out we're seeing a tremendous irony that when you think about trapping animals, the most classic way of trapping them is setting up a trap. Yeah, we're coming out saying that setting up a trap is not an issue midiraisa. So whatever it's worth, the Chazon Ish is very much bothered by your problem. He's very much troubled by this issue that he feels that it should have been a problem. And you see him struggling with this, but at the end of the day, the Rishonim don't say it. So he kind of has to concede, but it's a very fair pargasha.
I would have assumed that setting up a trap was a problem of tikkun mana, because generally a trap is not a useful thing until you do the mechanism of setting up or maybe baiting it.
Okay, so Mr. Cohen is pointing out that maybe setting up a trap should be makev patish. I guess the answer, it would depend on, if the trap has to be assembled, then that would be a very fair point. If the trap has to be assembled, maybe there would be makev patish in assembling it. Right, I guess I was kind of envisioning the old-fashioned mouse trap with that metal bar that you kind of pick up. So I wasn't picturing assembly, but that's a fair point. If it would need assembly, there could be makev patish as well, 100%. But these modern roach traps that you open up the box and you just kind of set it up. So maybe it wouldn't need that assembly. That's a very interesting point. Mordechai. Wow. So Mordechai is asking, how do you have hasra with regard to malachas seda in light of the fact that the person, there's no guarantees when you run in front of the animal and trap it, there's no guarantee that you're actually going to result in the animal being trapped. So how is your partner was bothered by that very question? But it's a complicated arichas. So I just want to definitely highlight the question. It's a very interesting question that, you need to get hasra, you need hasra zvadai, where you know the guy's going to do a malacha. And in this situation, the person, he's startling the animal, but how do you know it's going to result in the capture of the animal? So that's a very, very fantastic question. Rapanas was bothered by it, but I just can't deal with it now. Okay, fine. So let's move on now to part two of tonight's shiur. So now we're going to work on developing the understanding of the yesod of leches tzeda. Try to, and ultimately this analysis is going to play into the tchelis debate. It's unbelievable how the lumnus we're going to develop tonight is going to have a direct application to whether you should be wearing blue strings, on your tzitzis. So we'll discuss that in 2 weeks. Okay, fine. Okay, so what's the underlying yesod of malaches tzad? It begins with a braisa on daf lamed vav amid aleph. In beitza. There's a gemara in beitza on lamed vav amid aleph, which brings a braisa which tells us the following halacha. It says that, let's say a person owns a beehive, and you know it's a lucrative asset, it's producing honey, and a person wants to protect his beehive from the elements. It's extremely hot outside, or it's raining outside, like it is right now. So you want to put over a mat over the beehive, let's say, to protect the beehive from the elements. So it says the Braisa, as explained by the Gemara there, that it's perfectly permissible. You can cover the beehive on Shabbos, provided you don't fully insulate, fully cover the beehive. You have to leave some holes for the bees to escape, because if you fully cover and close the beehive, then you're trapping the bees. That's a problem of melaches tzad. And even though this isn't your kavana, your intention in covering the beehive is not actually to trap the bees. You just want to protect them from the rain. And as a byproduct, you happen to be trapping them. It's not your kavana, it's not your intention, but this is what we call psik resha. It's definitive. Since lamaisa, when you fully cover the beehive, the bees will be trapped, so it's going to be a problem. That's the Gemara in Beitza and Daf Lamed Vav Amid Aleph. Comes along the Balatrumas, and the Balatrumas extracted a certain chumrah from this braisa. It says the Balatrumas that during the summer months, when there are flies, let's say, swarming around, so a person has to be careful if there are, let's say, flies swarming around the chest, not to close the chest and to trap the flies. Just like we're seeing from the Gemara in Beitza, you can't cover a beehive and trap the bees in a beehive. So too, you can't close a chest if it's going to trap flies in the chest. And because obviously that's going to be a problem of melaches tzad. And although your kavan in closing the chest is not to trap the flies, you just want to function with the chest and to close the chest. But again, this is a psik resha, it's definitive that the flies are going to get trapped in the chest, and therefore it's going to be a problem. So that is the famous chumrah of the Balatrumos, which extracted from that Gemara in Beitza. Comes along the tour, and the tour argues on the Balatrumos. There happens to be a very significant ambiguity in how to understand the Torah. We're going to present the approach of the Taz. We're going to work with the Taz's explanation of the Torah. This happens to be an extraordinarily famous Taz. As I'm going to highlight it as we go through. There's a very famous point in this Taz that many people know, but many people know it out of context, because you're not usually learning Melechus Tzad when you learn this Taz. You're learning your Day or other sugyas when you see the Taz quoted, and it's a very big Taz, so it's not easy to look these things up. But we're doing it actually from down up. So I'm going to highlight the famous points, and we're going to appreciate the context of this famous Taz. Okay, so it goes like this. The tour, as explained by the Taz, argues as follows in response to the Balatrumas. He says that, I'm going to agree to you that if it's 100% that there's a fly in a chest, 100% that if you close the chest, you're going to trap the fly in the chest, so then I will agree to you that it's going to be prohibited. You can't do it 100% because of the issue of tzeda. But says the tour, you don't have to be so meticulous and cautious about this kind of situation. This chumrah is not so practical. In tzarech ledaktik, I'll say. You don't have to be so medactic about this situation. If there are flies going around, maybe you shoot them a little bit. You're not sure if there are flies in the chest or not. You don't have to be so cautious about this halacha. Why don't you have to be so cautious about this halacha? For two reasons. For two reasons, says the tour, it's not so nogeya Lamaisa. Reason number one is that it's not so clear that tzad does apply in this type of situation. Because, says the tour, it could be argued that there's no tzeda at all when you trap a fly in a chest. Because since when you trap a fly in a chest, you're not actually going to be able to catch the fly when you open the chest. If when you open the chest, the fly is small, fly is fast. You try to catch the fly, you're not going to be able to. So maybe tzeda doesn't apply in that type of situation. Maybe tzad only applies when you trap something and it's retrievable. You throw a net over some type of creature and you can retrieve it from that net. So then tzeda applies. But if you trap something, you can't actually retrieve it. I trap a fly in a box and if I open it, I'm not going to be able to catch it. It's going to fly right away. So then maybe tzeda doesn't apply. This is in contrast to the case with the bees. We saw with the beehive that if you cover the beehive, there is a problem of tzad, where the Torah says, as explained by the Taz, that you could catch the bees. The bees are bigger. The bees fill up the whole beehive. I recommend using gloves if you try this. But when you take the mat off of the beehive and you try to catch some of those bees, so apparently that is viable because of the big quantity of bees that are packing up the beehive and the size of the bees. It's more viable apparently to catch some bees, and so therefore there is say that they are retrievable. But when it comes to the flies where you can't retrieve them, maybe it's seita doesn't apply. So that's reason number one why it could be this chumrah of the Baal Trumas is not so applicable. Fine. Reason number two of the tour, and this is where the Taz becomes very, very famous. We'll highlight this later on in Mirtz Hashem if we have time. You have a question, Daniel, before we go on?
I was going to suggest that maybe a difference, but I'll
finish up. Okay, so let me just finish up, and then we'll summarize, and then we'll just we'll stop for questions. Fine. So the second reason of the tour, as explained by the Taz, for why we don't like the applicability or why not to be so cautious about this chumrah of the Baal Trumas is like this. It's based on the principle of Davar She'en Miskavein. Davar She'en Miskavein is the classic principle that if someone wants to do a certain activity which is permissible, which you can call a primary activity, you're focused on a certain primary act, which is permissible, but it may or may not result in a secondary act that's prohibited. So we paskin like Rabbi Shimon that a Davar She'en Miskavein is mutter. What's the classic case of Davar She'en Miskavein? So the classic case is Gorer Adam Mita V'Savsel. Let's say a person wants to drag a chair on an earthen floor on Shabbos. You want to transport the chair across the floor on Shabbos. And the concern is that when you drag the chair across the floor, it may create furrows in the ground. And creating furrows in the ground would be a violation of the Malacha of Choresh. Let's say we're outside. If you make furrows in the ground, that's a problem of Choresh. So this is a classic instance where we have a Davar She'en Miskavein situation. I want to do activity A. I'm focused on my primary act of dragging the chair, which is perfectly permissible. It may or may not result in a secondary act of making grooves in the ground and doing the malach of choresh, which would be prohibited. Since it's only a possibility, it's not definitive. Maybe yes, maybe no. So we paskin that this is permissible. This is a davar. In a miskaven, I don't have any intent to do that secondary act of choresh. I'm focused on just dragging the chair, my primary act, and therefore it is permissible. That's the classic heter of davar in a miskaven. Says the tour, as explained by the Taz, this is the second reason why you don't have to be so meticulous when it comes to the case with the flies in the chest. Because as long as, you know, let's say you shoo them away and you're not so sure if there are flies in the chest or not, as long as it's not a vadai, so we can permit you to close the chest based on Davar She'en Miskavein. Listen, when I want to close the chest, so I'm doing a primary activity, which in and for itself is permissible. I'm doing an act of closing this chest, and it may or may not result in a secondary act of trapping flies. Maybe there are flies in the box. Maybe there are no flies in the box. If there are flies in the box, does it say they're taking place? If there are no flies in the box, there's no say they're taking place. So this is a classic case, says the tour, where we can apply Davar She'en Miskavein, and it's going to be permissible. And so you don't have to be so meticulous about this situation. So those are the tour's two arguments against the Baal Trumos. And with that, we've seen the basic facts on the ground here in part two. So let's just summarize the facts, and we'll stop for some questions, and then we'll start the analysis. So just to summarize one more time, we saw the Gemara in Beitza on Lama Vav and Aleph, which told us this halacha, you can't trap bees in a beehive on Shabbos. And the Baal Trumas carried that over to flies in a chest. He says, if there are flies going around a chest, so be careful not to close the chest because you're going to trap flies in the chest. That's a problem of Malachas Tzad. And the Torah argues on the Baal Trumas, and he says, you know, I might agree to you that if it's 100%, then you shouldn't do it. But as long as it's not 100%, you don't have to be so meticulous and cautious about this halacha for two reasons. Reason number one is the truth of the matter is it's not clear that tzad applies in this type of situation. Since the flies are not retrievable, you can't actually catch them when you open the box to do anything with them. So maybe tzad doesn't apply. That's argument number one. Argument number two is let's apply the heter of Davar She'en Miskavein, that as long as it's not 100% that there are flies in the box, maybe yes, maybe no. So listen, I'm doing activity A of just closing a box, which is permissible. Maybe it will result in activity B, maybe it won't, of trapping flies in the box. And so Davar She'en Miskavein tells me that as long as they don't have kavanah for activity B and it's not 100%, so then I can permit doing activity A of trapping of closing the box, despite the fact that it may trap the flies in the box. So that's the famous back and forth here to the Baal Trumos versus the Torahs. Let's just stop for some questions and then we will start the analysis. Yonah, let me just answer Yonah's question first. Yonah.
Why does he agree in a case where it's 100%?
Okay, good. So Yonah is asking, why does the Torah agree in a case where it's 100%? The Torah's first reason, she even apply in a case where it is 100%. The Torah's first reason was that tzad doesn't apply to trapping flies. So even in the case where it's 100%, if you can't retrieve the flies, it should be permissible. So the answer seems to be that the Torah wasn't so confident in this answer, that it's a reason why, you know, an argument against there being any issue at all in this situation, but it's not 100%. So I'll use it in conjunction with another reason to be makel, but in and for itself, the Torah, as explained by the Taz, wasn't willing to rely on it by itself. Daniel.
Yeah, is it possible to suggest that maybe there's, like the second answer, there's more of a melachah shenit tzricha legufo argument to be made? Because it would seem from the paradigm of chilazim, the whole function of trapping is not merely to quarantine or cordon off something else. It's to get something, to have
excellent,
something.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, excellent, excellent. So the Ritva spells exactly what Daniel just pointed out. Daniel's pointing out, isn't this a melachah shenit tzricha legufo? There's an idea that when you do a melacha, you have to do it for a specific purpose. If you don't do it for the right purpose, then it's not going to be also deraisa according to Rabbi Shimon. And Daniel is asking, isn't this whole discussion here melacha shenit tzricha legufo? So the answer is 100%. The Ritva spells this out. He brings down the Baal Truma's chumra not to close the chest with the flies. And he spells out that the Baal Truma is being machmir, despite the fact that this is the Rabbanan because it's a melacha shenit tzricha legufo, despite the fact that this is a psik resha, you're not directly having kavana to trap the flies, I'm just trying to close the chest. So it's what we call a psik resha. Despite the fact there's going to be another reason why this is the Rabbanan, because it's the Ein Bamino Nitzod. We're going to get there at some point. There's another reason why this is the Rabbanan. You don't typically trap flies, and that downgrades this to the Rabbanan. Despite all these Rabbanans, Baal Truma was still machmir on this issue. So that's a very good point that Daniel is pointing out. Absolutely, we're discussing the Rabbanan machlokus, but we're going to see that the Yesodos are going to be very fundamental. Okay, any other? Okay. Fine. So we're going to, Emir Tashem, try to analyze both of these answers of the tour. Both of them contain very significant chidushim. The first one is the most important one that we need for our purposes. And then if we have time, we'll try to get to the second one just because it is a very famous point, even though it's not a Malachas Tzad issue. Okay, so let's analyze the first answer of the tour. The tour's first argument against the Baal Trumos was that you don't have to be so meticulous about the situation of trapping flies in a chest, because it's not so clear that, say, the flies in this situation where you can't retrieve the creature that was trapped. That was the Torah's argument against the Baal Trumos. Now, the Baal Trumos obviously argues on this point of the Torah. The Baal Trumos is telling me that you cannot trap flies in a chest. He's not going to argue in the facts. The facts are that if you try to catch a fly when opening the chest, you're probably not going to be very successful. I don't assume that they live in different societies with different agility. We're assuming that the Matthias is the same, that they can't catch flies when you open up the box. And the Baal Trumos doesn't care. He doesn't care about the fact that it's not retrievable. The mere fact that you trap flies in a box is a problem of Mulaches Tzad. So we now have a basic machlokas Rishonim. This is our first big machlokas here in Mulaches Tzad as to what are the parameters of Mulaches Tzedah. The Torah is setting down an argument that maybe Tzad requires that the creature captured is retrievable. If it's not retrievable, Seda is not going to apply. Whereas the Baal Truma doesn't care about this condition for retrievability. The mere fact that you trapped it is a problem. The question becomes, what's the Hesber in this Machlokas? What's the conceptual basis for the Shita of the Tur? What's the conceptual basis for the Shita of the Baal Trumas? So the Achronim, So Achronim points out that this is going to come down to a fundamental Chakira that is going to be get to the Yisod of what Melechas Tzad is all about. So we're going to see that this chakir is going to have very far-reaching consequences. So that's what we're going to do right now over Shavuos. So my son, we were at somebody's house on Shavuos, and the kids were playing in the other room, and somebody yelled out that, you know, we're in the process of capturing a fly. So the Balabas knew that I was working on Melechat Seda. He said that maybe you should ask your father if that's mutter or not. So I responded to him. So this very sugya of catching flies. I responded to him that you should know that the answer to the Shaila is connected to the Shaila of whether you should be wearing tchilas or netzitzis right now. Yeah. So he said, really? So the answer is yes. So in 2 weeks, we're going to see this very analysis of this very machlokas about catching flies on Shabbos is going to play into the Shaila of wearing tchilas on Shabbos. So let's just analyze this machlokas internally, and Mirza Shem will do a proper job, and we'll see how it's going to play into the tchilas Shaila. Okay. So the Chakira is like this. What's the Yisod of Melechet Tzad? So Rav Nissen, Kaplan, and other Achronim point out as follows. There are two basic possibilities for how to understand what's the fundamental accomplishment in trapping a creature. Possibility number one is that maybe the Yisod of Melechet Tzeda is the deprivation of the freedom of movement of a Baal Chai. Right before you trap this creature, it was able to move around. When you trapped it, you've deprived it of its freedom of movement. Maybe that's the accomplishment. Maybe that's the yesod of Malaches Tzedah, what the Achronim call Shlilas Hacheres, taking away the freedom of movement of the Baal Chai. Maybe that's the yesod of Malaches Tzedah. That's possibility number one. The second possibility that the Achronim point out is to emphasize a different angle to a situation where you trap a creature. And that is to say that maybe the yesod of Tzad is not per se the fact that you're just depriving it of its freedom, rather it's the fact that you're bringing it under your control. The fact that this creature was running around and was not accessible to you, it's not under your control. And when you trap it, it's now under your control. Maybe that's the yesod of Malaches Tzad, what they call hachnasa l'rishoso, being machnesit, bringing it into your control. Maybe that's the yesod of Malaches Tzad. So we're posing a basic chakira now. What is the fundamental yesod of Malaches Tzedah? Is it shlilas hacheres, the deprivation of freedom, taking away the freedom of movement of a Baal Chai? Or is it hachnasa l'rishoso, bringing a creature under your control? So that's the chakira. Now, what's the nafkmina in this chakira? So Amir Tashem, over the next 2 weeks, we're going to see a number of nafkminas in this chakira. But for tonight, so the first nafkmina is going to be this machlokes between the tour and the Baal Trumas. So let's go through the issue of capturing flies on Shabbos, and we'll see how it's totally on this chakira. So starting with the first tzad in the chakira, if we define tzad as deprivation of freedom, so what would you say about capturing a fly? I trap a fly in a box. I'm not going to be able to catch the fly once I open the box. I have no way of accessing the fly. I cannot catch the fly. Should there be a problem of malachet tzedah in this situation when I trap a fly in a box? So the answer is absolutely. L'maisa, when I trap the fly in the box, I'm depriving it of its freedom of movement. I've satisfied the definition of tzad. Tzad is depriving a Baal Chai of its freedom of movement. As soon as it's trapped in the box, its movement has been limited. That should be a problem of Malaches Tzad. So this would be a beautiful, straightforward explanation for the Shita of the Baal Trumas. Baal Trumas says that there's a problem of tzad in capturing flies. So he would be holding that tzad is defined as deprivation of freedom. And Lamaisa, when you trap a fly in a box, you've deprived it of its freedom. That'll be a problem of Malaches Tzad. So that is the explanation of the Baal Trumas. Let's move over now to the second tzad in the Chakira. If we work with the second tzad in the Chakira, so it's going to come out differently. The second tzad is to say that the yesod of tzad is bringing a creature under your control. Hachnasa l'rishoso, being machnesit, bringing it under my control. That is the yesod of Malaches Tzad. If you work with the second tzad, so now the Tur's argument takes on significance. What was the Torah saying? That how could you say tzad applies to a creature that's not retrievable? You may have trapped the fly in the box, but you have no way of retrieving it. You can't actually catch it. As soon as you open the box, it's going to fly away. Tzad shouldn't apply. If we work with the second tzad in the Chakira, so we now understand this very beautifully. If the yesod of tzad is bringing it under my control, well, you can say very strongly that how can you say that this is under my control if I can't actually control it? I can't actually retrieve it. There's a very big deficiency in my control. If I can't actually catch it and control it, I can't acquire it. And so that should not be a problem of Malaches Tzad. So that would be the explanation for the Shita of the Tur, that there may not be a problem of Tzad when it comes to flies on Shabbos, because of the fact that if you can't catch it after you open the box up, it's not really under your control. And therefore, there should not be a problem of Malaches Tzad. So that's the classic explanation that the Achronim give for this issue. So halacha l'maisa, was my son allowed to capture the flies with a cup, let's say, on Shabbos, on Shavuos? So the answer is, the question is, how do we pass? Can you pass on the Baal Trumas? Pass on like the Tur, it's totally on this Chakira, right? I'm assuming that when you open up the fly, you take the cup off the fly, you can't catch the fly. So how do we paskin in this machlokes? So the halacha l'maisa, we paskin like the Baal Trumas, that it is usher to definitively capture a fly on Shabbos in a small area where it be contained, so it would be prohibited. So I did not recommend encouraging the children to go around capturing flies on Shabbos. Also, we want to have respect for living creatures, but anyways, fine. So that's the analysis of that machlokas. Any questions? Yeah. Okay, so Mordechai is saying if a fly goes into your house and you close the door, is that a problem? So this is so the basic principle of Malaches Tzedah is that certainly on the Raisa level, and Tzad only applies if it's considered to be constricted to the point that you can get it in one lunge. If in one chase, without needing a breather, you can get it. So that would be a problem midaraisa. But if you can't get it in one chase without taking a breather, so that would be a that would be perfectly permissible on a deraisa level. The Rabbanan, it still has to be, there's a broader range, but even the Rabbanan level would not be a problem. I assume that you'd not be very successful getting that fly in one lunge, especially if you're not exercising so much. You know, I'm just saying, not you, I'm just saying somebody. I'm just joking. Fine.
But even if that's the case, that you can't get it in one swoop, then even if you have it in a garbage can, you cover the garbage can, you cover the box, you get it either way.
So this is the Chashuki Chemed's case. The Zilberstein was asked the Shaila, what's the halacha if you have a garbage can outside on Shabbos and there are flies swarming around? So can you close the garbage can on Shabbos? So, and let's make it a small garbage can just to make it more of a problem, like I say, because if it's a smaller garbage can, so then you're trapping the flies in a more constricting manner. So what's
the halacha? Even if you have a shoebox and you put the fly in the shoebox, you're not going to catch that fly unless it's a horse fly.
Right. So just to reiterate, we pass something about trumos, which means that even though when you open the box, you can't catch the fly, that's still a problem. So,
but you're not depriving it. So how are you depriving it of a movement? It's still going to fly around. Do we consider depriving of movement?
Yes. Okay. 100%. When we say depriving of movement, so I guess we don't mean that you have to paralyze it and like put it on a stretcher. We mean to say that it's that it feels constricted. If you block a person in the fourth floor in Landers, so he'll be able to move around, but he'll probably go nuts after a few minutes. With a Baal Chai, if you trap it in a small area that you can get it in one lunge, that's considered to be constricting it enough that there's a deprivation of movement. But that's a fair point. Let me just finish up because we have 2 minutes left. So just to finish off the Halacha Maisa already. So we paskin like the Baal Trumos, but we do paskin like the Taz as well, in the sense that the Mishnah Berurah brings down that if let's say there's flies swarming around a garbage can, let's say you have a smallish size garbage can, it could probably big is also a problem also mid the Rabbanan. Let's say you have a garbage can with flies flying around, so can you cover the garbage can with a cover on Shabbos? So we paskin like the Baal Trumos that if it's definitive that there are flies inside the garbage can, you cannot close the garbage can. But we also paskin like the Taz in the sense in the second argument of the tour, in that if you just swish around your hand and you wave away the flies, so there's no definitive fly there, but you're just not 100%, maybe yes, maybe no. So in that situation, we could be makel. We will be makel if it's not 100%. As long as it's not a vadai, we'll be makel like the tour as explained by the Taz, based on the second argument of Darvish and Miskavian in the situation. So that's the halach lamaisa with garbage cans. So I guess we didn't have time to get to the second point in the tour, but it's really not relevant for our discussion of Melechet Tzad anyways. So I think we'll just stop here. Okay, Shkayach. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Have a good Shabbos.
Okay. Shabbos. Dov, there's an electricity discussion that's relevant to this. So we have to hack it out. This tonight's discussion is relevant to electricity and Shabbos. We have to hack it out.
Okay, let me hear.
Yeah. Maybe I'll call you just because they're going out tomorrow. So let me set my
computer. Okay, up. Sure.
I'll call you. Okay,
yeah, sure. Yeah, that's fine.